right, it's Freedom Fiends Live. It is our live Saturday show, July 13th. You already know what it is. We've also got Michael.
Hello, Michael W. Dean here. This is Michael W. Dean. Holla, holla, holla. We got you there, Nima?
Yo, I'm here. Yeah,
holla.
Yeah. Representing
the
ATX.
Yo, this is some hard-hitting news we got here on the Freedom Fiends. It's not the Morning Zoo crew. It's actually more like, today, it's more like the Daily Planet. And I'm Perry White, the editor, and Nima there is Jimmy Olsen and Clark Kent. We've got Clark Kent in this corner. Clark Kent weighing in at 148 pounds at 6'7". We've got Mr. Ben Swan. How you doing there, Ben Swan? Whoa.
I'm good, guys. Thanks for not calling me Lois Lane.
Yeah, so, yeah, Ben Swan. Ben Swan is a hard-hitting newsman who hits so hard that news hit back. And today, instead of having an interview, we're going to have a rap cipher. That's when two rappers kind of like trade off and improvise as they go. And it's going to be Nima Vedotti and Ben Swan, because they're both hard-hitting newsmen who left, basically, because news didn't like to be hit that hard. So Ben Swan did nearly 17 years of mainstream TV before getting the heck out. He's an award-winning television reporter who's worked in New Mexico, Texas, and Ohio. He won the Edward R. Murrow Award in 2004 and a Lone Star Emmy in 2005. While at Fox 19 in Cincinnati, he produced a fact-checking series entitled Reality Check, which gave him national coverage for his reporting about controversial issues. He may have been telling a bit too much truth for mainstream media because, despite his high TV ratings and popularity nationwide on YouTube repostings of his news packages, Swan left Fox 19 in May 2013. He's since started a Kickstarter campaign called Truth in Media Project to continue production of his show Full Disclosure through a Chicago production team. Yeah, so we're going to play a little tiny bit of him so people can hear what he did on mainstream news that was too much for them. And then we're going to introduce Nima, and then they're going to cipher. They're going to talk to each other because they have a similar background. Nima left after 3 years. He didn't achieve the rock star levels.
I couldn't stay at it that long, man.
He would have, but he got the heck out. So why don't you go ahead and play this little bit here of Ben on
Fox. Well, this is a moment that every TV journalist dreams of. And Ben Swan got to ask the president of the United States
face
a question.
Face to face, and, alone, and in a room with him from four feet away. He looked him in the eye, and he's like, why do you lie? Why are you doing this crap? Which,
kid gloves here. Let's play it. This is a beautiful moment.
The idea that the commander-in-chief, regardless of who it is, has a list of people, including American citizens, who can be killed without trial, isn't just a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. So I wanted to know.
The so-called presidential kill list that's gotten a lot of attention, and this list of folks who have been targeted for assassination. Right. And on that list have been U.S. citizens who have not been afforded trial, including Anwar al-Awlaki. Mm-hmm. How do you, as president, or any president for that matter, regardless of party or person, utilize that power to assassinate even U.S. citizens?
Well, first of all, you're basing this on reports in the news that have never been confirmed by me, and I don't talk about our national security decisions in that way.
That's such a Clinton moment. That's so like, well, it depends on what the definition of murder is. Yeah.
Hey, that's how politicians always answer.
I admit that I'm doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yep. All right. So Nima Vedotti is a former television journalist. He won the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters Award for Best News Piece in 2010, which is kind of the Wyoming equivalent of the Lone Star Emmy. So after working in a larger market in Washington State, he quit television news because he was disappointed with the limitations of the format. Nima does hip-hop music as Nima V and lives with his wife in Austin, and he's quit being a mouthpiece for the state doing TV news 3 years before he left kicking and screaming to do Liberty Media with the Fiends. So I'm going to step back and let you two rappers battle it out and trade ciphers and not battle and cooperate.
Well, I'm used to doing interviews, so there's a few quick things I want to get out of the way, Ben. How did you get to ask the president that question? Did he come to Cincinnati? Was it a thing like that, or what happened there?
Well, the way it worked was during the 2012 election, obviously Ohio's a huge battleground state. So you've got, you know, President Obama came something like 14 or 15 times to the state. Governor Romney was here about as many, Paul Ryan. And then you have all the surrogates who also show up, right? So you have Michelle Obama there, Joe Biden, Jeb Bush, everybody's there. It's like Ohio gets to decide the entire election. And we can get into that some other time. But the bigger problem here was that you get onto a waiting list trying to get with any one of these big name folks for an interview, and you sit on this long list and you might get it or you might not. So he happened to be in Toledo, and they told us, see, they have this strategy with the campaign, so it's fairly new. If you are a reporter in Cincinnati and the president comes to Cincinnati, you're not allowed to interview him. You have to be a reporter from some other area in the state in order to be able to get the interview. And the reason they do it that way is because they know that the president's going to show up on your newscast that night, on every single newscast in Cincinnati. So what they're trying to do is get greater coverage by saying, okay, well, reporters from Toledo, reporters from Columbus, from Cleveland, you guys come on down to Cincinnati and we'll give you one-on-ones with the president. So in this case, it was the president in Toledo. And so guys from – it was only two of us. It was one from Columbus and one from Cincinnati, myself, who got the chance to go to Toledo to interview him there. So that's kind of how they structured the whole thing.
Did the other broadcast journalists give you the side eye? I mean, nobody asked him a question like that. What was your general sense that you got from your peers? And I mean, when you started this reality check thing, did you get pushback from it?
Well, yeah, definitely so. The reporter who was there the same day I was to interview the president went first. And so he finished his interview and left the room. So he actually wasn't in there when this interview happened. Did I get pushback on it? Absolutely. And one of my disappointments was that ultimately some of the higher-ups at the station I was at were frustrated with the interview because I basically had 5 minutes. You get 5 minutes to go in there and ask as many questions as you want. The problem with this president and many of them is they kind of a filibuster when you ask them a question. So they drag that one answer out. So you're lucky to get two questions in, maybe three questions in. You know how that works.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, you go in there to do that interview, and I've got in my mind, you know, four different questions I'm hoping to get to. I actually got to all four. The interview itself went 7.5 minutes because he was so frustrated with the questions I was asking him and wanted to get in the talking points about Ohio and the economy in Ohio and the auto industry in Ohio, that he just takes a question about Afghanistan and just goes into this whole thing about Ohio with it.
Wow. Wow. Now, when I got into broadcast journalism, you know, it was my dream to kind of do what you got to do with Reality Check. And, you know, I realized pretty early on that that's really not the way it works in modern broadcast news. When did you sort of get the sense that something was wrong with modern broadcast media?
Well, I think I felt it since early on in my career in terms of kind of that groupthink mentality. And when you challenge things, look, when you start out in the business, and you know how this is, you get into it and you're kind of wide-eyed and you watch what everyone else is doing. You've got photographers who in many cases have been around for a long time, and reporters are really young. So, you know, I actually started out as a news photographer, so I was able to kind of be brought up by a lot of older reporters that I was shooting for and then transitioned over to become a reporter. And as I did, you know, in the beginning, you're chasing house fires and car crashes all the time. But if you want to get into more in-depth stuff over time, it really is an issue of having to be able to prove yourself. And every day, listen, when we were doing Reality Check, and what you just said about that would be like your dream gig to be able to do that, I can't tell you how many times reporters around the country have told me the exact same thing, even here in Cincinnati, who say, that is exactly what I wish I could do every night. I mean, that's the kind of thing that needs to happen. It is not that no one in TV had never wanted to do this before I came along, and now all of a sudden, you know, it's kind of disappearing. Uh-huh. It's like all these people want to do it. The problem is management gets in the way of it because they're so afraid of offending someone or causing controversy. Meanwhile, you know, as you know, the broadcast, local broadcast news is dying. It's vanishing, you know, off of the airwaves. And it's because no one feels anything. You can watch a local broadcast, and if you're not, you know, put to sleep by how boring it is or irrelevant it is, you know, it's not good TV. It's not interesting. There's nothing that you feel about it. And so what we have to do is give people something, they feel something, even if they don't like what you're saying. If you challenge people intellectually, if you challenge them with the facts, it becomes much more interesting TV. And so my management got into a tough spot where it was like you had all these people watching online. You had incredible growth. When I came to this station in Cincinnati, they were close to being in last place. The only thing that was keeping them above water was the fact they were an earlier newscast at 10 o'clock. My final month in May, we were number one across the board in demos in prime time. I mean, that is a huge turnaround.
Yeah.
And it's because people felt something. They said, okay, I like what this guy's talking about. And maybe I don't agree with everything he says, but I want to hear what he's going to say because it's not just the same old stuff.
Now, did you pitch it to them like that? Were you there just to do reality check or did you have to do a package a day still? Or did you do a package a few times a week and then some days were specifically for a reality check?
No, the way it worked was when I came to the station, I showed up and they had just wrapped up. I went there as a primetime anchor. Okay. So we did a 10 o'clock and a 6:30 to 7:30 newscast. And so I show up at the station and I'm there for a month and they tell me, by the way, we just finished this huge research project with a new consulting firm. It's called AR&D. Yep. And you know how that works. And so
I remember those consultants,
they always come in and they always want to change something. And so, because that's how they get paid. They get paid to make changes, not to tell you everything's fine. And so their idea was, look, there's this gap in the market. And I'm going to actually tell you guys something that I don't think I've ever said in an interview before to people. But cool. They said there's a gap in the market for what's called Snopes-style journalism, fact-checking what's going on.
Yep.
And we think there's an opportunity. And then they say, we're going to show you something. And they show me a video of a guy in Minneapolis who's doing a segment called Reality Check. Okay? And they said, we want you to take this and we want you to do the same thing here. So Reality Check – confession here, and again, nobody else has ever heard this before. Reality Check was stolen.
Was he on Fox? Stole it. Was he on Fox?
Well,
nope. He was not on the Fox station.
Wow.
Nope.
He that was kind of stuff happens all the time. I don't begrudge you that at all. I mean, how many places call themselves Action News or you know, Your News Tonight or whatever is?
And the whole Reality Check idea that they were doing, it looked good. The guy basically who was doing the Reality Check in Minneapolis. I went to their website. I watched a lot of what he was doing. Basically, every night it was a bash Michelle Bachmann fest. So he wasn't really, you know, getting after like you know, rule of law issues, constitutional issues. So what I turned it into was vastly different than what he was doing in terms of content. But the idea was the same, right?
Did he ever send you hate mail for that?
No, it's funny. I monitored him to see what he was doing, right? And he was doing them once a week, and then it became once a month, and it was like it's too much work. You know, being in the business, the amount of work and research that goes into one of those, to put those on three times a week, it's crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot. And we'll be back with more Ben Swan after we go to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Welcome back to a very special episode of Freedom Fiends Live. It is Saturday, July 13th. I'm Nima Vedati. We've also got Michael W. Dean.
Ha-ha.
And special guest, Ben Swan, the Superman of local TV news, although now he's doing his own thing. Ben, people sometimes asked me, you know, after I left TV news, you know, people had this sense that the way it works is it's sort of a top-down thing and the corporate masters will step in and tell you exactly what you can and can't say. I didn't really feel like that was necessarily the problem. It felt more like it was a cultural thing. We did have in the second station I was at in Washington State, we did have a focus group, a market study, and everything after that had to be on brand. So it was them scrambling to try to give the people what they want, and what the people wanted wasn't necessarily the kind of reality check, hard-hitting stuff that you ended up doing that your focus group told you to do. But I kind of got the sense that the other journalists and the news director, they had a very it was almost a bias towards the status quo. It wasn't a liberal bias. It wasn't a conservative bias. It was just, well, we have this large government. We have this local government, and that's the way it works, and problems need to be solved through that. And we will respect our cops, and we will respect our local leaders and give them the benefit of the doubt because, you know, they got to where they are for a reason. And that was kind of the culture that I didn't take to. I would always prefer truth to loyalty, so to speak. What do you see as the main problem that keeps people like you, that keeps the hard-hitting truth-telling stuff from being prevalent in modern broadcast news?
Okay, well, first of all, I'm so grateful for this conversation that we're having right now, because I think you have a great understanding of the dynamics here that a lot of folks who have interviewed me about this do not have. So I really do appreciate that. And I totally agree with you that it is not so much these corporate masters who are reaching down and saying, we need to suppress this information and keep people from hearing it. It is a groupthink mentality. Let's talk about just the local part of it for a minute, because you're absolutely hitting on some really important things. In my opinion, consulting groups have destroyed local TV news, completely destroyed it. And that's because they spend all their time trying to force people into this formula that they have derived that is supposed to be what people are interested in. And it's all based on research. And whenever you challenge it, you've got some news manager who says, oh, but the research says. Yeah, but research can say anything you want it to say if you ask the question the right way. So when they ask, for instance, do you care about breaking news? And people say, yeah, I care about that. Well, the problem is that doesn't mean I want you to call everything breaking news, whether it's breaking or not. So if it's 6 o'clock in the evening and something happened at 2 o'clock and you say, breaking news, there was a house fire today at 2 o'clock. Well, that's not really breaking. So, right. So, but people care about that. And so I'm sure you dealt with all kinds of stuff just like that. You know, another example of that is people care about severe weather. Okay, yeah, they do. If there's a tornado, people really do care. But every time a raindrop falls, that is not severe weather. It's right, not. Right. So they start calling it things like it's disruptive weather. No, come right. on. It's not disruptive. It's rain. Unless you're the Wicked Witch of the West, it's not disruptive, okay?
Yep.
Unless
yep.
it that melts you on content.
That used to annoy me to no end. I had a news director that always would tell me, weather drives the news, and it would snow, and I would have to go out and do a package about the snow. Or one time it rained, and I ended up doing a package on something else, and the next day my news director gets a hold of me, and she's like, you know, it was pouring down rain. And I was like, yeah, that's just the weather. I'm from Texas. I'm from Houston. It rains torrentially like that every other week. It's not a big deal.
Every
that's not newsworthy.
Day. That's
Ben,
right.
Ben, I call those focus group types marketing weenies. And marketing weenies exist in every media I've been involved in film, in publishing, whatever. It's the people who like have the MBA in business and try to come in and tell you how to do things according to their pie chart mind. And it doesn't really work. Music,
no, you're
especially
absolutely
with music.
Right. Listen, I want to give you guys an example too, because you know, the consulting firm that pitched this whole, you know, reality check idea, they loved it because, I mean, in their words, they said this thing has seen success like nothing we've ever seen before. We have never seen something take off the way that this thing has. And they ran a second research project specifically on it and found out that it had this incredibly high name recognition. People liked it. People were turning to it. You know, they were challenged by it. But one thing they never pointed out when we would have conversations, and I'd always point it out to them, is I broke every rule they gave me for what TV is supposed to be. So as you know, Nima, they'll say, for instance, a news package cannot be longer than a minute 30 because you lose people. They're not interested in that, right?
Two minutes if it sweeps.
That's right. If it sweeps, it's 2 minutes. What we're doing at the height of this thing is running between 5 and 5.5 minutes, which drove them crazy. They're like, it's too long. People can't possibly take in all this information. It was crazy.
But you broke it down so well, though, and it ended up being a really great thing. So way to judo it and turn it around, and we'll be right back with more Ben Swan on The Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. 5 centuries after the first spaceflight, the stars remain beyond humanity's reach. So a mad scientist enlists the aid of a young technician, Nicole Orem, as they travel through the solar system, encountering the hazards of space and human treachery. Quantum Vibe, Volume 1, Nicole, collects the first 400 strips of the epic sci-fi webcomic series, available now from the major online bookstores or direct from bigheadpress.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
All right, we're back on Freedom Fiends Live. It is Saturday, July 13th. I'm Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in Beast Lick, Wyoming.
Worms.
And he's going to ask a question of our special guest, Ben Swan. What do you got, Michael?
Hey, this is Michael Dean broadcasting from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. So we were talking on the break about The Simpsons. There's a rule in The Fiends, we have to have one Simpsons reference per show. It's not really a rule, and it's got nothing to do with Fox. They did not pay us to do that, but we like to do it. We like The Simpsons. And there's a Simpsons show where they go on a reality show called 1860s Challenge, where the family has to live with the technology only that was available in the 1860s. And they show the producers coming up with it or discussing it beforehand in the TV boardroom. And one of the producers says, I have a great idea for a show. And by great idea, I mean I stole it from Dutch television. And that is how things happen. And that's how Ben's show came to be. But he made it work and made it special. Made it so special, they didn't want him doing it or something. I don't know. So I want to talk about, I want to know how you came to leave this kick butt job at a major news corp. How did that happen?
Well, okay, so it began with the fact that I had an option in my contract. So as Nima knows, the way these contracts are set up, you can barely escape them with your life. Yes. Once you get into one. So, you know, you go through this process, and I actually had – there was an option in my contract to be able to leave in May of this year. The station wanted to keep me. I mentioned a few minutes ago how well our ratings were doing, and it was a great job and just – a lot of advantages to it. But the way I kind of viewed it was this, that the point we've reached in our country, and because of the response from people about the kind of journalism that we were doing, there has to be a way to get it out to a broader audience rather than just doing it from the confines of this one station in Cincinnati. And so for me, it really was about taking this thing to the next level. So what I ultimately want to do with it is create this content again, this full disclosure content that we're trying to fund through Kickstarter, get that onto streaming sites, and even get it out onto other local stations, ownership groups throughout the country, because we want to just get it out to as many people as possible. But ultimately, the goal is to create an internet online 24/7 streaming network that is to the internet what CNN was to cable 40 years ago. And to not go the route of CNN, where you end up becoming kind of just a propaganda arm of an administration, but to really restore journalism. There was a Pew poll that just came out, you guys might have seen, that shows 28% of Americans feel, only 28% of Americans feel that journalists provide any kind of useful service to society. And so the vast majority of Americans are against it. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm not sure where they asked, but the fact that, you know, that means 72% of the country says you provide no useful service whatsoever. That's pretty shameful.
So not only will it be the normal internet channels, but you also want it to be something that local TV news affiliates could pick up, you know.
Yes.
I used to produce a weekend show, and you know, in the middle segment we'd have a national package that we could take from, you know, ABC or CNN or whoever we liked the national package from, but people can just stream it down and then play it as if it, you know, on their air. You're saying people could do that?
That would be the idea. Yeah, we want to get it onto as many of those as possible, because there is still I think we proved with the reality check, a great advantage to being on those local stations where the content in many cases is very poor to begin with. And talking like that, I'm probably not going to get on anywhere place, but you know, I think that you have to put it out there and see what happens with it. And we have a great track record of saying, this is the content we've already done. This is the response we've gotten from it. I mean, Reality Check was the most successful local news franchise in history, probably. I mean, what other franchise right. can you look at and say it has people in 140 countries, 10 million views watching it on just YouTube? We were running about 3 million views a month on our station website, and a third wow. of it was just Reality Check.
Wow. Wow. Did they love you for that over there at Fox 19? Because what I wondered is, this stuff wasn't really local. You know, in the stations I was at, things had to at least have a local peg or a local angle that you were working, even if they were national stories. You broke a lot of rules. You know, these were yep. big stories that you might see on CNN, obviously from a much better viewpoint and perspective. You know, you didn't have the sound bites, the sots, at, you know, from each side and just let those folks tell the story.
Right.
You know, I had a journalism professor, Robert Jensen, Bob Jensen, when I went to University of Texas. And one of the things he taught me was this idea that news is objective ends up being a detriment, because what reporters end up doing is they just go get soundbite from side A, soundbite from side B, and nothing ever really gets hashed out in any kind of real sense of what the truth is. You just have lie one and lie two. You didn't do that. You know, you just got on there and you sifted through it yourself, and through your own point of view, told what you thought the facts were. Well, they're facts. So I guess it's not even what you thought the facts were, but what the relevant facts in your case were.
Well, that's exactly what I did. And when you ask, you know, how does the station perceive that? The reality is, candidly, the station looked at it and they loved it and they hated it at the same time. It was we love what this guy's doing. We love the numbers that are coming in, how many people are watching online. We love how many people are watching locally, all the enthusiasm around it. But then they hated it because, again, as you said, it broke all these rules. And so they didn't really know what to do with it. It's like, okay, so, you know, it's not local enough. And it's we would fight about that a lot, too, because my claim was, listen, when I talked to the president, they said, how could you talk to the president of the United States and not ask him a single question about Cincinnati? We actually got into like a big blow up over this. Why is it that you could not ask him a single question about Cincinnati? Throw at least one question in there. And my argument was, every question I asked him was a local question, because every person in Cincinnati is subject to this kill list. If you allow a president of the United States to have that power, you have subjected every citizen of the United States, including people in Cincinnati, to it. No, no, no. Why couldn't you ask him about the bridge? And I would tell him, look, the bridge in Cincinnati where the president had stood – and by the way, I did a reality check about this too. The president stood in front of this bridge here and talked about how we needed this jobs bill in order to get it fixed, and then show people how the jobs bill, number one, had nothing to do with it, and number two, it would take another 10 years before they could even begin the process. So all of it was just rhetoric. And my challenge to them was, you guys are falling for this local game where the president's talking about local stuff and he's not talking about anything. If we interviewed him and put a Cincinnati Reds logo behind him, that wouldn't make it local. But you know, it's this perception of what is local, right? And yeah, so when I talk to him about that, or the NDAA, indefinite detention, when you can indefinitely detention any U.S. citizen on suspicion of either terrorism or supporting terrorism, that affects every person in Cincinnati. And so that was the push that we had, the push and pull on this issue, because they always wanted it to become more local and always wanted those local sound bites in it. You know, and on the other hand, you know, I would always say, look, these things are local. It affects every person's life. When we talk about healthcare, it affects every person's life. When we talk about the Second Amendment, it affects every person's life. And there was a lot of tension about that. That was probably our biggest clash.
Well, I'm glad you were able to stand up for what you felt was the right thing to do from a journalistic point of view and didn't get shanghaied into going out and doing man on the street interviews or something like that. I remember that's one of the things I hated the most, is trying to get a reaction out of people, because half the time they don't know what's going on. Exactly.
That's right. It is the appearance of creating balance, as you talked about. It's the illusion of balance, or the illusion of putting these people into it. When you go to and by the way, I'm just going to guess, when you would go out to get man on the street interviews, you either went to a gas station or you went to a public park.
wherever. Well, yeah, no, public no, man. Park. He went to
some administer bureaucrat's office and said, like, why are you tell us why it's good that you're spending more of our tax money on this? And they'd say,
that's not man on the street, but yeah.
Oh, sorry, but
I would have to do that stuff too.
Yeah,
right. But man on the street. That's why it would always drive me crazy when some of my other jobs. In journalism, they would say, go out and do these man on the street interviews. We need you to get an MOS, as they call it. And you'd say, well, where am I going? You go to a gas station. And you know you go there because you're just looking for people. Or you'd stand outside of a Walgreens and you got somebody. And you could always, you know, I don't know if you got to this point, but I was pretty good at picking them. You know, you can tell who's going to talk to you and who's not. And it's not based on the fact that they're informed. It's based on the fact that it's somebody who wants to talk a lot.
Yeah.
And so you can get them to say 5 seconds worth of something. Now I've got it in my package. It's a horrible
and your system. And your producer wants you to film five of them and use the two that say what he wants to hear.
Yeah, that's the thing too.
The two that are the most eloquent.
I remember, have to fit
that. Yeah.
There was a big hubbub at the airport once. Some lady got harassed by the TSA. She gave her grandma a kiss through the fence. Like it was a smaller airport, so there was actually a fence and you could walk out onto the runway. And she went and gave her grandma a kiss. And so the TSA shut down the airport and flights were delayed and people were upset about it. And I didn't come back with anybody saying something to the effect of, well, it's for our safety and we're just glad we're safe. Nobody said that. And the producer who was producing that day said, you don't have a sot like that? And I was like, no, nobody said that. They were just upset that they couldn't fly. And she goes, okay, well, I'll just write it into the tag. But nobody said
right.
it. And I'm just thinking, right, this is the way it works.
Because it's the illusion of balance. It's the illusion that where's – I'm sure the terminology that was used was, where's the other side?
As if
there's only two sides to an issue. And that's part of that left-right paradigm that we have in media today that's so ridiculous, is that there's only two sides to an issue. It's why we can get away with having a presidential debate and only have a Republican and a Democrat in that debate and say, no, we're covering this debate fairly because we're picking the two sides.
Right.
As if there are only two.
You brought us to a wonderful segue there. Speaking of this left-right paradigm – where are you at? Where do you consider yourself at? I almost don't want to say politically, but I'll let you choose, either politically or philosophically. Do you have a stance? I mean, I don't know if you want to explain that since, you know, you're supposed to be a journalist impartial, that kind of stuff. But where do you stand and why is liberty? Because obviously when you watch the Ben Swan stuff, you realize this guy has a very good sense of what liberty is and the fact that we shouldn't have a tyranny in modern America.
The Fiend,
where do you stand on that?
It's okay to ask that on the Fiends. The Fiends are unfair and unbalanced.
Right. Well, look, the first thing I'd say to that is there is a misnomer at the idea that any journalist does not have an opinion. Larry
sure
King was on RT, you know, he's got a show on there now. And he was talking about this issue with Glenn Greenwald, saying that any journalist who shows favor or opinion is not doing journalism. And first of all, number one, Larry King is going to say this. And then secondly, that's ludicrous. Every human has opinions. That doesn't mean that you insert your opinions, but the idea that news is without bias is kind of nonsensical, because the bias of a journalist should be to say, I stand up for the people who are supposed to be represented. So if you're interviewing a president or a member of Congress, you should be holding them accountable to their oath of office. And where I stand
sure
is
should.
With...
But we'll be back in just a minute after we go to the market. Okay, Ben? Thanks.
Do it.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, not your dad's talk radio.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies!
Jesus.
On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
All right, welcome back to Freedom Fiends Live. We're at the bottom of hour one. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in rural Wyoming. I'm here in Austin,
Texas. Walls are melting. I've been smoking bison hair. Okay, I got a disclaimer. My wife said when she heard me talking about smoking bison hair last week that people would think it's code for drugs. I'm not doing drugs. I'm making a joke. It's just weird fiends weirdness. I'm not smoking bison hair, and I don't
take
drugs.
It's just the phenitude. Right.
I took enough drugs by July 7th, 1994 that I'm tripping for life and don't ever have to take drugs again. So let's carry on with this newsworthiness.
That's why we love having you on the show. So, Ben, on your Kickstarter page here, you've got a list of the problem. Actually, there's three problems here you list. The first one is our culture is truth deficient. The historical centers of truth have broken down. Now, what truth is it you feel we have a deficit in right now?
Well, I think you can take your pick, but look the left-right paradigm, again, is what we go back to. So, and I think we've been talking about a lot of this. The illusion of balance has caused a deficiency in truth. So we're not interested in pursuing truth. CNN has this clip, and I know it's been made fun of by Jon Stewart a number of times. He does a great job of mocking it. The whole, we'll leave it there. So they'll have some, you know, two people from either side, and they're debating something, and then all of a sudden, you know, they get to the end. Well, we're out of time. We'll have to leave it there. And he, you know, he comes back to Jon Stewart and he's like, no, don't leave it there. Tell me what the truth is. And I think that's what we're lacking, right? Media has created this thing of we're going to get lots of people's opinions. And the truth is out there somewhere, maybe. A great example of that is Edward Snowden. So we did a piece, and it's up on benswan.com, about the NSA and about Edward Snowden. It gives people an idea of what we're putting together with these full disclosure episodes. But we talk specifically about the fact that the whole Snowden argument, the debate about who he is and who his girlfriend is and all this other stuff around him, is he working with the Chinese, mm-hmm. you know, is he working with the Russians, is all distraction from the actual central issue, the truth issue, which is, was what the NSA doing before and continues to do a crime? That's right. The real question, and no one's asking that question. They're all debating all these other issues about Glenn Greenwald and Snowden and all that. And so we are able to show very succinctly the fact that what the NSA was doing is a crime. It's not it is not allowed under law, even under the Patriot Act, even under the FISA Act. It's not allowed. That's important because in comparison, you watch, like, for instance, I was watching Fox's The Five a couple of weeks ago, and they're talking about this issue, and they're all sitting there together, and they keep saying over and over, well, if what the NSA was doing is against the Constitution, or if it's a crime, if it's really a violation of constitutional rights, and they keep using the word if as if there is no mm-hmm. real definitive way of knowing.
Right.
No, we can never really know. And so what we've done is we've taken all the things that are opinions, and we've made those facts. And we've taken all the facts and we've made them opinions. And so we're mm-hmm. truth deficient.
Right. Well, here's one of the things we do at the Fiends is I like to take that even a step further. And not only was what the NSA doing and continues to do a crime, but even if it was sanctioned by some law written somewhere, by some directive or some presidential order, even if it had some kind of legal pass that some lawyers or legislators had written, would it still be wrong? Because to me, that's more important than if the paper somewhere, some words on a piece of paper say that it's okay. It can still be wrong. You know, there can be a difference between morality and legality.
No, you're absolutely right. But that is a secondary issue. In my opinion, the moral issue, the ethical issue, is secondary to the law issue right now. So, for instance, the NSA says what we're doing is perfectly acceptable under law. FISA and Patriot Act gives us the right to do this. And I can demonstrate to you as a journalist that it's not, that it's actually illegal for it to be happening, then what that should require is that lawmakers take action and that the Department of Justice go in there and arrest people working for the NSA because they've been committing a crime against the American people. It requires action if you're committing a crime. If you're doing something that's unethical, that requires voters and politicians to take action and amend the rules and amend how you're doing things. But and this is something we've forgotten too, is that government, if they're committing a crime, should still be charged under law for that crime.
You're right, 100% right. But unfortunately, that doesn't happen very often, if at all, especially these days. But we'll have plenty more here on the Freedom Fiends Live with our special guest, Ben Swan, the Superman of local TV news and now internet mogul. So we'll be back in just a few. Any other closing words for Hour 1, Michael?
Yes, and Nima Vidati is the Jimmy Olsen, and this is Michael Dean, and I am the Perry White, and sometimes the Barry White. Hi, this is the Barry White of Liberty. We'll be back for one more segment with Ben Swan. Yeah.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Top of the hour, radio show.
Worms.
We've got Michael W. Dean.
Worms.
Saying worms over there in Wyoming. And we've got Ben
worms.
Swan,
worms.
Our special guest. Are you there for us, Ben?
I am.
Hey, Ben, will you say, since it's the Freedom Fiends, will you say worms?
Worms.
All right, thank you.
That was a good word.
It's going to be my new ringtone, is Ben Swan saying worms.
That's probably the best guest worms I've heard so far.
Yeah,
so
guest
we'll
worms.
We'll see if other guests can top that, guest worms.
It's time for the redemption in the third act, though, which has nothing to do with worms.
Yeah, if we can find some. Well, worms help to bring the redemption about, kind of a creative destruction. Kind
first,
of thing,
let's right? since we tend to butt up against the ads, Ben, how can people find you and donate and see what you're all about?
Well, you can go to benswan.com. It's Swan with two N's, so BenSwann.com. There you can find out some of what we're doing. You can watch Full Disclosure episodes. We have two of them, as I mentioned, one on the NSA. The other one that we've put together is on Al-Qaeda in Syria. I think what people are going to see when they watch this is not just how we take the same kind of analytical method that we used in Reality Check, but we've actually increased the production value quite a bit with this project, and certainly graphically, because again, the goal here is not just to you know, excuse the phrase, but preaching to the choir here, but we really wanted to have a large reach for people who really don't understand this stuff, especially Liberty stuff, and bring them into that mindset. So we've tried to put together something that we think will accomplish that. And you can go there and you can check it out. You can also click on the Truth in Media Project link. That will take you over to our Kickstarter page, and you can check out what we're doing there. And you can back the project. You know, you don't have to sacrifice the kids' milk to do it. We're not asking you to mortgage your house. We have almost 4,000 people who have done it, and our largest single contribution I don't know exactly what the term is, the grouping, I guess, for it are $10 donations. So, you know, $10 goes a long way in this project.
Cool. I have to ask why you have such a high threshold, $1.25 million, and you've actually raised like a quarter million or more, which is mind blowing. But why did
30
you?
Days.
But if
in
you don't, days. If you don't raise all of that, you don't get any of that. Why didn't you set your threshold at a quarter million?
Well, because I think what we wanted to really do was test and see what the market could do, and certainly we want to do 100 episodes, which means that we're able to put these out at least three times a week. That was the hope, because that's what we were doing before. You know, we really want to get as much of this out there as possible. The way it works with Kickstarter, as you're pointing out, it's an all or nothing deal where either you don't hit your goal and you don't get any of it, and that's true through Kickstarter. However, what we're going to do is ask people who have supported it, because we're hearing from them saying, if you don't hit this goal, is there any way we can still make this happen? And we can. We can just say, look, it's not happening through Kickstarter. Go to PayPal. We've set up a PayPal account on BenSwann.com and then do it there. And we'll scale the project based on what we have. So right now we're at 20% of our goal. We'll create 20% of the episodes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Now, you kind of hit the nail on the head where you say the historical centers of truth have broken down, and that's a huge problem right now. I kind of feel like on the internet, a lot of people already get the truth or are seeking the truth. You know, it's a much more dynamic situation. But, with something like this, I guess you say the goal is to have really good production quality so you're not just preaching to the choir. What kind of success do you think we can have, you can have, the world can have at that with your project?
Well, I think that what we've already done with Reality Check is awaken a lot of people to some of these ideas. Certainly ideas about the fact that the founders and framers designed a constitutional republic that viewed the individual as a sovereign, and that the individual's sovereign rights even supersede the greater good concept. And that's one thing that we're really battling against in our current culture, is because we have this greater good concept that says, well, listen, you don't really need your rights if it makes me uncomfortable. And so as long as we can all be comfortable with you losing your rights, then you lose them. And so we're really working to change that. And I've heard from a lot of people who will tell me, look, I've been talking about the stuff that you talk about in your segments for years, and my family or my coworkers or my friends, they don't listen to me. And then I take what you're doing and I show it to them and they watch it, and then all of a sudden like a light bulb goes off for them and they say, oh yeah, I totally get that now. And we're changing people's minds. But it's because I understand this. I didn't create the system that says people learn with video and they learn with text and they learn with graphics and they learn with pretty colors. I didn't decide that. That's already been designed through people with a lot more money than I have and many, many years of marketing and really propaganda, if you will, experience in order to control how people are receiving information. But that is the system that we have today. So what I want to do is take that same apparatus that's already been designed and those same basic learning processes that people have and say, well, let's use that in order to re-educate people on liberty, on individual freedom, and break down a lot of, again, these areas where truth is not being told in our society today, to awaken people to what truth really is.
Well, you were on Scott Horton's show, I think it was on Monday, and one of the things he's fond of saying is, you know, if TV isn't saying it, then the American public doesn't think it's true. In fact, they don't even think about it. So there's these huge lies of omission because CNN and Fox and their competitors won't talk about it. MSNBC won't talk about it. Do you think it is the format, you know, the pretty colors and the graphics and the whoosh sounds? Or do you think it's also the fact that these are the players, these are where people turn to because they flip their channels there and it comes through their cable rather than coming through their Wi-Fi? Or do you think it's both? And do you think it'll be a hindrance, the fact that you're not, even though you're producing stuff of similar quality or better quality, still the fact that it's not being broadcast through the channels that people are used to seeing this stuff through?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. If we just set it up on a website, then yes. If we're just putting it out online, then I would agree with you, or it's just on YouTube. When we put this content on Amazon Prime, when we put it on Hulu, I think it resolves a lot of those issues, because even though people, yes, I agree with you, will say, well, if it's not on TV, but you know what, if they're seeing it on a streaming site, whether it be a Hulu or even eventually we want to get it out to Netflix, and that's a little bit of a different process because of the way Netflix does it, people would still see that as, again, legitimately a source from which entertainment comes, and therefore it's legitimate for news as well. Why people think that, again, it's stuff that's far beyond me. I didn't create it, but I think we can take advantage of it. The other thing is, again, still taking this content and getting it to some of these large station groups that are right now lacking in content, and giving it to them for a sweetheart of a deal so that we can get that information out to a much, much broader audience. And taking stuff that is produced on a very high level and giving them access to it very inexpensively. Again, we're using the platform that's already been set up ahead of us. So, but I will agree with you on this. If people don't see it on TV, they do think that it's not legit. But people are also accustomed now to watching TV clips, short clips on video or on the internet. And so the technology has changed a lot, that if you, again, you resemble, you have that level of production quality behind you, people will watch it and say, that guy's saying it, so it must be true.
I think if you have the tech specs for broadcast correct, there are stations that would download packages via FTP from you.
Yeah, I know for a fact that there are a number of station groups who have already started contacting me saying, what are you going to do with this stuff once it's created? Would you be willing to, you know, share it with us? And so there are some very large ones who are already talking to me about that. And again, the advantage for us is that they have these huge platforms where a lot of people are watching, especially older people are watching, where I think we can really affect that mindset. I know we were doing it here in Cincinnati with the people who were watching, because they were saying, I just can't believe the stuff you're saying, and no one on TV is talking about this. And to that other point you made, Nima, which is important, is that there is an idea that if national media isn't talking about it, then it's not happening. And that even happens in newsrooms where I'll take a story. And when I talked about the delegate stuff, it was so frustrating to me that you're talking to these guys and explaining to them how this stuff works, and they're saying to you, well, how come nobody at the network is talking about it?
I have a suggestion. Put the stuff out, Creative Commons, full commercial use and remix allowed, Creative Commons attribution license on a non-password protected site, maybe even with an RSS feed of like large media. I seriously think if you do that, people can remix it, even make parodies of you, whatever. It'll get the most eyeballs on it and grow your brand more than having any like, okay, you have to sign up and agree and sign this. Just give it away. Use the Creative Commons attribution license, which allows full creative use. They don't have to contact you and say, can we use this? They just grab the high def video. You know, it'll be kind of a big download. But, and also we're actually distributing the Fiends episodes via BitTorrent with an RSS feed, which we could tell you how to do later, but it's not a lot of people are doing it with TV, but it would work with TV. And it would also keep you drone proof. Like if they throw you in a cage and take down your website for free speech, which may happen in a year or two, if it's on BitTorrent, they can't take it down because it's on hundreds of hard drives around the world.
Ah, okay. No, and I think you're making a really good point there too, which is that one thing we want to do also is get it out to alternative media. So, you know, whether it be radio stations, internet radio, bloggers, One of the problems that you've run into when you see things like CISPA and all these internet piracy bills that have been set up is they're designed to shut down a lot of alternative media because you can't reuse anyone else's content. If you pull someone else's content, all of a sudden you're violating their copyright, and they can not just make you take it down, which is what currently would happen under these bills like SOPA and PIPA and CISPA. They would actually shut down your entire website because you're violating that. And so one thing we want to do is also be a source for a lot of alternative media by saying, here's content and you can take it and run with it and do whatever you want. Take it and use it. You don't have to pay us for it. You don't have to license it from us. Just use it so that you get this information out and you have a source that you're able to work with, as opposed to you run something off Fox and all of a sudden News Corp has you shut down.
Yeah, and Creative Commons attribution license is the best thing for that, because if you just say, oh, it's not copyright, whatever, do whatever you want with it, a major corporation like News Corp can't use anything legitimately with their lawyers that doesn't have a clear licensing on it. And Creative Commons attribution license is a clear license that major News Corp and News Corporation lawyers can work with.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's a great idea.
You heard it here first, people. So what's next? What do you see as the future of like America and the world?
Well, I think that we're in a really good place right now, because even though, you know, I go around saying liberty is rising, that's a big part of what we're doing, is this whole idea of liberty is rising in America and worldwide, globally, because liberty, don't get me wrong, is not an American idea. It is a human idea. But I think, you know, people have challenged me on that and said, wait a minute, why are you always saying liberty is rising? Because liberty is dying in this country. We have far fewer liberties than we've ever had. Well, that's true, but there is an awakening to that, and that's what I'm excited about. But time's short. We got a small window here. We got to make something big happen, and I think now's the time to do it. Technology, communication, opportunity, it's all here.
Amen. Thank you so much for your time, Ben. It was wonderful.
Guys, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
All right, it's Freedom Fiends. Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I'm Nima Vedati, and we've also got Michael W. Dean. How you doing, Mr. Michael?
Worms.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. And not only that,
worms, fish, and hogs.
Of course.
Yeah. We got Mark Baker here from Baker's Green Acres, and they're having an event there. The police or the state or Monsanto or somebody's trying to take his pigs. Mark, what's going on with your hogs there?
Well, it's how you doing? It's actually the Department of Natural Resources that's trying to take my pigs.
The Department of Destroying Resources is what we call them here at the Fiends. Yeah, so this is in Michigan. Oh. So what happened? What happened and what's happening and what's going to happen?
Well, back in 2011, they came out with a list of characteristics. And if your pig had even one of those characteristics, they said that that pig is feral. And they've added feral swine to the invasive species order.
It's like an assault weapons list if it has any of the indicators. So you have assault hogs, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's good. Yeah.
What is it about these pigs that they don't like?
Well, they don't like feral pigs, and I probably don't like feral pigs either. But our pigs are behind fences, and they're taken care of by us. We feral them here, we finish them here, and then we sell them. And they don't like that, but really this is being done by the industrial agriculture complex. They are trying to move people towards centralized food, so they're making it difficult for small farmers to make a living. It's just more of the same.
Do you kind of have a different philosophy from the way most of the pork production or meat production in general, or even farming as far as these industrial farms? What's sort of your philosophy as far as the way food should go? Are you kind of in the locavore scene, or what's going on there?
Yeah, I guess you could say I'm in the locavore scene. That has to do with we're raising food and we try to sell it directly to our customers. We don't want to use a distributor. We don't want to, you know, middleman it if we can. And we also try to mirror nature in the way that we farm. Like, we don't think that we should use chemicals. We don't think that we should be medicating our animals if they're not sick. We believe that the animals should have a happy life. They should be outside and be well cared for. And we feel strongly about if they are going to be slaughtered, that that's stress-free. We don't think that it's fair to make them wait several days in a strange place to be killed. We think they should be killed locally or on the farm, actually.
Do you think that now, trying to take your pigs from your cold, dead hands like they're doing, do you think that's like a UN Agenda 21 thing, or is it a federal kind of like top-down thing or a local thing, or what's behind this? What's pushing this?
Well, I mean, it could be an Agenda 21 thing, but I have no way of knowing at the level that I'm at. It could be, because it does kind of line up with what the Agenda 21 thing is. It could be, but I don't know. The highest I know that it goes is to the highest levels in our state government, which would be the governor's office, because our governor could have said, this is not a good idea for our citizens. You know, our citizens are free people, and just because the pork producers doesn't like us raising animals that are better quality than theirs and, you know, a better foundation of customers, that's no reason that the state should engage us in what we do.
Does he have any connection to big agribusiness? Like, if you follow the money, where does it go with him?
I don't know about him. I know that if you follow the money, as far as we can follow it, it goes to an outfit called ALM, and that's Ag Leaders Michigan. And they're all the big factory farming outfits, like big corn, big chicken, soybeans.
So are they driving, potatoes. Did they drive through this law that outlawed your pigs?
Oh, yeah, they all signed it. They signed on to what they call the Feral Swine Initiative.
So what's going on with this? Like, the police came, or who came, and did they point guns, and is there a court case, and what's the status on it?
Yeah. Well, we had a hearing yesterday in Saukee County, and it's a pretty small courtroom. It would seat normally 50 people, but we had, I think the estimates were about 175 people in the courtroom. I mean, every inch that could have been occupied was occupied. And then in the foyer, people that couldn't get in stayed there anyway. And the count, according to Kelly, the kitchen cop, was 326 people. And she interviewed people, and they were from 13 different states.
We're going to go to a break here and go to the market and then come back and have more from Baker's Green Acres on the Freedom Fiends at freedomfiends.com.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
All right, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends Live. I am Nima Vedati out here in Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean and...
I am
there in Michigan, Mr. Lou.
Yeah, and this is Mr. Michael Dean. I am broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America. And it's been an interesting show today. We had Ben Swan on for the first hour and 20 minutes, and Ben Swan that was a really good interview. And then we had a good interview with Mark Baker from Baker's Green Acres. That's bakersgreenacres.com. If you want to go there and help or learn more or donate to his legal defense fund, because he is facing Big Brother and Big Ag, and they are trying to crush him and his pigs for doing free and open commerce, which is apparently illegal in America now. And they're having an event at the hog farm there, a big party. And I guess we got Eddie Free, but Eddie Free is off talking to girls, I think, because there's a lot of hot chicks involved in activism, which people should remember. If you're doing activism, go. If you're a boy, because there's
chicks
girls.
Dig it.
And if you're a girl, go because there's boys. And if you're a girl who likes girls, go because there's girls. And boys, same thing. So we
boys
got
who like girls.
We got the man on the hog farm interview here with Lou. How you doing there, Lou?
Greetings, fiends, and I am broadcasting live from a different type of pork fest deep in the heart of enemy-occupied territory in the police state project of Michigan. What
yeah.
to do?
So what's going on there? What are you looking around? What are you seeing there?
You know, this has been a very, very good weekend out here. There's just a wide variety of people. They came from all over the place. There's a lady that's from California. She was one of the lawyers for Vernon Hirschberger in Wisconsin. You got Derek Jay is here from Philadelphia. Eddie Free from the District of Criminals. Folks got on the ferry and came across from Wisconsin. There's a fellow from Cincinnati who's originally from Iran. And basically everybody came together to stand up for a guy that most of them had never even met and would have never even heard of if it wasn't for the Department of Destroying Natural Resources under the direction of the state aggressor general messing with this guy.
Now,
so
okay.
they all came together.
So was this guy a popular guy? Like, was he really a threat to big ag and big pork? I mean, were people buying his hot dogs left and right? Or is this just the big corporatocracy trying to smash down on any little ant that might even think to infringe on its territory?
He is one of, I believe he said there were 2009 farmers in Michigan that do the same thing that he does. So when you have 2009 folks with 80 acres, and raising pigs and cattle and all the other stuff. And I guess there's some great pictures that are going to be in the article on this. But when you have that many people, that becomes a threat. Now, something else about the breed of pig that he raises, it's a very high quality meat. So it would be like generic hot dogs, you know, the corporate folks taking on the prime rib folks. And
I see.
A lot of the fancier restaurants purchase his pigs because of the high quality of meat.
Well, is Baker's Green Acres the only ones fighting back? Did all the other 2009 of similar folks just lie down and die, or are they not being targeted as heavily?
There was another guy, I think I told you about this a couple of years ago on the show. He went and he shot his herd to keep the Department of Destroying Natural Resources from coming out, locking him in a cage, kidnapping him and his family, and doing the deed themselves. There are some that are sitting on the fence looking to see what happens, and they're being a little bit opportunistic. Mark is the only one, or at least one of the few, that is actually taking on these statocrats head on.
Yeah,
and it
looks
like it's the person that's saying we're not going to take it.
Well, do you think it'll help in the end? Do you think he has a chance of winning? I mean, obviously, a lot of people came out to support him. That's why you're there. That's why all those people you were talked about are there. How big of a win could this be if he's able to beat back the Department of Destroying Resources?
Well, from what I gathered from earlier conversations, he wants to take this to a jury trial, and he wants to get a definitive judgment. If you look back what happened with Vernon Hirschberger in Wisconsin, he was acquitted of three charges, and the one charge that he was convicted of, the prosecution had finagled the evidence and stacked it up. And basically, when the jury saw it, three or four of the jurors went to the sentencing phase and said, had we known this, we would have voted not guilty on all counts. And he was given a very lenient sentence. And it was considered a victory. And if you can consider winding up having to go to court for owning and using property, a victory, you know, it was the best possible outcome out of that situation. And I think that's what Mark wants to do, is he wants to get that victory and combine that with Vernon Hirschberger. And there's some other ones that are going on across the country now.
A win for case law. Does he have to hope for some kind of jury nullification here? I mean, is he obviously in violation of whatever statute the statocrats say they're pointing to? Or is he going to try to win on some kind of actual legal grounds? Or does he just have to put it on the mercy of 12 people who may or may not accept his line of reasoning?
Well, Actually, I think it's going to be all of the above, because when you look at the invasive species order, I mean, it's completely idiotic and typical of government statocrats. There's absolutely nothing intelligent about what they said. I mean, a pig with erect ears or floppy ears, curly tail or straight tail. So essentially, he's attacking the invasive species order, but he's also going to need the assistance of jurors that will say, you know what, we're not just challenging the legitimacy of the statocrats' actions. We're challenging the legitimacy of the statocrats themselves.
Okay, excellent. And not only that, but it's a good time to get out there and support people like this, not only because it makes you feel all warm and fuzzy inside because you're doing the right thing, but, you know, like Michael said earlier, it's a party. Are people living it up over there?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. Earlier today, about 11 a.m. or so, they did a demonstration of how they process and butcher a pig. And they threw that thing on the grill, and let me tell you something, that meat melted in your mouth like cotton candy. And out here, you got all these different people from all these different places. There is a large voluntarist contingency out here. There's also, you know, traditional constitutionalists and everything else, but everybody's getting along. There might be a little bit of debate, but there's no arguing, there's no fighting. You know, it's a great time. And you got all this good food. I finally had raw milk for the first time in my life, and it was like liquid ice cream.
Nice. Well, we didn't get to when we talked to Mark is, yeah, that's great. And, you know, people like this this meat, and they might want to eat this, you know, natural, you know, not factory farmed pork. But really, to me, that's almost irrelevant in the larger context of the fact that it's this guy's land. This guy is raising the pigs himself. And obviously, he's got customers who come directly to him to buy it. So it's just these two guys, these two parties that are doing their thing, and then the state has to get involved and just make a mess of the whole thing.
Well, isn't that always the case? Here's the bottom line. Each person has the right to own and use property as they see fit, so long as they have not caused demonstrable harm to another against their will. He has the right to own pigs. He has the right to sell pigs to those who wish to own them, and they eat them. It doesn't matter if you're talking about property as far as having floppy ears, a full-capacity magazine, or if it's green and leafy. Now, there is no such thing as half-free.
Yeah.
Period.
Man, that was like mad science poetry, especially that line about demonstrative something. That was – at first I thought you were quoting case law, but that was out of your head, huh?
Yeah, I read a dictionary once.
That was awesome, man. Not just the big words, but the – you sure got a pretty mouth. You use it better than a – nah, never mind. I'm not going there. So, Nima.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing about the guy, the other guy having to shoot his hogs reminds me of, you know, there's two things that happened to me, three things that happened really early on in my life to make me not trust the government. One was the Vietnam War, watching it on TV in 1969 when I was five. One was watching the president of the United States say, "I am not a crook," and then resigning. And I'm like, "But mommy, isn't he the best, most smartest man in the world?" And the third thing was when I was like six, watching a bunch of farmers on the news pouring milk down a gutter. And it was something like, you know, it was some government intervention. And they're like, "We will pour this 1,000 gallons of milk down the gutter before we'll do this stupid thing the government's trying to get us to do." And that was like one of my really early memories. And like, I just was reminded of that when you said that there was a guy who shot his pigs rather than let the government take them over. And that, it, you know, that's kind of like we're going not even full circle. We're just on the same train. And it's good that there's people who are fighting its derailment.
Lather, rinse, and repeat.
Yep. Well, it reminds me of being in high school and reading Grapes of Wrath and the imagery of them plowing crop fields over. You know, the government, I guess, wanted to control and manipulate prices. But while they were doing this, people were starving. The market wasn't allowed to work. You know, people starve when the state is in control of the economy. I mean, that's what happened in the Soviet Union. That's why people starve in China. That's why there's rumors in North Korea of cannibalism. And, you know, a lot of it's unconfirmed. But you can just imagine, yeah, hey, that's totally possible, you know, in a society where the state gets to decide what people get, when they get it, how they get it, then nobody gets anything they need at the appropriate time.
Mm-hmm. Word.
Mm-hmm. Are you munching there on your own pig over there?
Man, don't curse farmers with your mouth full. That was a bumper sticker when I was a kid. Yeah.
Worms. That's totally true. Yeah, worms. So you still there, Lou?
I'm still here.
Lou, okay. You got any final thoughts to wrap up? I mean, is you got any redemption for this whole pig farmer thing?
The one thing that everybody from the different backgrounds here can agree upon is that the people that call themselves the government need to understand that we are not their property. We are each individual human beings. And if I could quote one of my favorite songs, I own me.
Word.
Worms, squirrels, and hogs, boys.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time, Lou. Keep fighting the good fight and keep pimping the fiends. You're obviously really great at it. Thanks, man.
Take care, fellas. Bye.
All right. Peace.
That was excellent.
All right, man. That man, sure was.
What a day.
This is a... It really is. All right. And,
I feel so newsy today. I'm feeling newsy. It makes me tingle all over being this newsy.
I know, right? Right? Nothing but interviews. Yeah. I guess we'll have some sort of tweak in review coming up here after we take a trip to the market.
And we'll talk about our interview we're having tomorrow, which is a big one, too.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Love the fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a torrent club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah, it's Freedom Fiends. This is Nima Vidotti. We also got Michael W. Dean. And it's the end of the show, unfortunately, for all of you. But tomorrow we'll be back with more. Right now we're going to do a little bit of Fiends.
Well, let's say what we're going to let's say we're going to be back with tomorrow. So we don't, you know, because we get chatty, we get cut off, we cut ourselves off, we don't time well. We're like we're like a bunch of frat boys screaming about liberty.
I like that sentence.
We're making fun of hype man. Yeah. No, tomorrow we have some amazing interviews. Who do we got tomorrow? We got Liz Delish and Daryl Young, who are Adam Kokesh's roommates, who were in the house when the battering ram of doom came in to take away the liberty. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so, that's going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that.
I don't even think CNN's got that. They ain't got that. I mean, they did a SOT or a man on the street with Daryl for about 10 seconds, like after it happened.
It would be a SOT. The thing with man on the street is it's random. That's why me and Swan were making fun of it, because it's completely pointless.
I don't know what that is. And speaking of news, the show The Newsroom comes up tonight, and we forgot to ask Ben Swan. I know you're not supposed to point out your mistakes, but we really wanted to ask Ben Swan what he thought of the show The Newsroom. So,
specifically, doesn't it suck that they say SOT instead of SOT? It's like, nobody ever says that. We had Ben Swan on today. It was great. If you're just joining us, go back and listen to the archives. I think that was some of the better Fiends radio that's out there right now. Ben Swan, of course, we called him the Superman of local TV media, and he really is in a way. And, you know, he did Reality Check. You know, Google him. Google Ben Swan with two N's at the end of Swan. And he does these great segments where he just goes through, you know, it's just him just saying the facts.
He does what news, it's what news should be. And literally, like, I showed, my wife had never seen him. She knew we were doing this interview, but I showed him this morning that video of him that we played at the top of this. And she was just like in awe. And we came to the conclusion that if all news was like this, there wouldn't be any problem, basically. I mean, literally, like, everything we're complaining about liberty not existing anymore and being stomped out, it still exists, but it's being tried. They're trying to stomp it out. that all hinges on the horizontal enforcement of the statism, yes, of the state, which is people co-signing it and saying like, yeah, of course they should, right, kill this guy's pigs. It's the law. But you know
it's
what? If all of the mainstream news was like Ben Swan, nobody would say that stuff, or very, right, few people would. You'd never get a jury to convict someone for something that shouldn't be a crime if everyone, mm-hmm, was like, mm-hmm, Ben Swan on the news.
Well, like you said, the way it works now is it's backwards. He was describing some of the Snowden discussion on places like CNN and MSNBC, and it's them saying things like, well, if this is illegal, you know, putting these qualifiers on it as if what the NSA is doing could be okay legally and morally, ethically, all those things. And then they treat opinions as if they're facts. So they have a talking head screaming about how this guy is a traitor, and nobody has a follow-up. Nobody has a succinct disproving debunking of the talking heads that are just screaming their butts off with nothing but opinions.
You know, there's a conspiracy theory that probably has some truth, that Fox News came out of a white paper from the Nixon administration, who was basically like, you know, Nixon, I mean, he was doing things like the NSA himself. He had a list of enemies, you know, and Senator Joe McCarthy, and who Nixon liked. And Nixon was like, I don't ever want an Edward R. Murrow again. We need to have a conservative network that gives opinions as news. That was like a white paper that came out of someone in some Nixon, you know, close guy to Nixon.
You know, another interesting thing is apparently Daniel Ellsberg, who was a big leaker hubbub during the Nixon era, you know, he wrote a thing in the Washington Post saying, in today's world, Edward Snowden is doing the right thing by trying to seek asylum elsewhere, because he wouldn't get bail like I did. He wouldn't be able to be out of prison for a year trying to explain to the public why leaking this information was a good thing. It was the right thing. It was in the national interest. No, if Obama got a hold of Snowden, he would throw him in prison and give him the Bradley Manning treatment. You know, that's where we're at, to where Nixon's administration seems quaint,
yeah,
and liberty-loving compared, yeah, to the Obama administration.
Yep. And Nixon's Watergate spying and all that, I mean, seems crude compared to the NSA. You know, it was only against, right, a few people, Nixon's list. Now it's against everyone and it's automated.
Yeah.
Freedom,
yeah,
fiends. Well, freedom fiends are the answer. Come back tomorrow.
There you go. That's our redemption. We'll be back tomorrow. Lots of great media coming up. We really appreciate you spending your time with us here.
Worms.
I'm Ian Vidotti.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends.
I'm Michael
with
Dean.
Nima V and Michael Dean.
Good night and good
Make
luck.
Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.